What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back into Morning Drive, Hour 3 live here on a Tuesday edition. Nick Braden, D-Mace, Marquise, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good to have you in today. Stick to Sports is coming up at 8:45 this morning. Little 24/7 sports double dip. We just had Wes Rucker on to talk about the Vols. Let's pivot quickly to the Doors. Chad Bishop, who covers Vanderbilt for 24/7 sports, is with us here on Morning Drive. Chad, we appreciate a few minutes. How you doing, pal?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Good morning to you all.
So let's look at this defense because, I mean, I get it. Vanderbilt, killer schedule to start. Georgia, Purdue, LSU. But defensively, you know, we saw them week one. They got pummeled on the ground by Georgia. The last 2 weeks, Sindelar and Burroughs are throwing it around like it's a scrimmage. And we know Derek Mason and Jason Tarver, defensive pedigree guys. What's the solution here to maybe stop some of the bleeding?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's been disappointing from my point of view to watch that defense struggle because, you know, all we heard preseason was, you know, it's year two for Jason Tarver. You know, yeah, they lost Jawan Williams and Ladarius Wiley and a couple linebackers, but they got a lot of depth and maybe they have more talent on that defensive side. And it hasn't clicked quite yet. And, of course, a lot of that has to do with Joe Burrow and Jake Fromm and Georgia and LSU and even Purdue and Elijah Sindelar and Rondale Moore. But at the same time, it just hasn't been great defense. It's not like, you know, that defensive side of the ball has just played, you know, their tails off and things just haven't gone their way. I mean, you take that LSU game Saturday, for instance, and, you know, the defensive backs were just playing so incredibly far off the ball, and LSU's receivers had all day and all kinds of space to run. And Joe Burrow was, while he was hit a ton, it really didn't seem to affect him and throwing for all those touchdown passes and jawing a little bit at the Vanderbilt sideline. So they definitely have to figure something out. Maybe playing those teams and playing those opponents will strengthen them in the long run. And maybe all those new guys they have on that side of the ball will kind of grow up a little bit through that fiery stretch. But they definitely need to show some improvement Saturday, against Northern Illinois and show the fans that they're headed in the right direction, because right now, you know, that defensive side of the ball looks like a huge liability.
Now, the offense, you know, they put up 38 points last week, and you figure on just about any world, 38 points should be enough to win a football game, but obviously not against LSU. Do you see this offense? They got the players. The quarterback has been playing okay. Do you see this offense based upon what they were able to do, you know, at moments and times against LSU, Purdue, for that matter? Do you see them trending upward?
I see them trending upward, but if you're looking at a graph, just kind of slightly, it's slight. I don't see it. You know, maybe there'll be something different to show me in the Northern Illinois game. I like the way they ran the ball against LSU. That was a big improvement given the way they ran the ball against Purdue, which wasn't very great. They need to put it all together. You know, you need Keyshawn Vaughn to have 100 yards. You need Kalijah Lipscomb to have 10 receptions. You need Jared Pinkney to catch a touchdown pass. You need to protect your quarterback. You know, they'll hopefully get some health back on the offensive line this weekend with Devin Cochran possibly returning to left tackle, and maybe that'll help solidify some of the offensive attack. So, yeah, I mean, it hasn't taken really any steps back to this point, but it hasn't taken that next step, gone to that next level, which we kind of all expected it to do with that big three on the offensive side of the ball. But, you know, it's week four, you step out of conference, you're playing a quote-unquote lesser opponent this week, obviously lesser than a top 14. So maybe that'll help the offense kind of get rolling and take that next step going into the next month.
So you look at this team, and 0-3, I don't think anyone in the fan base, even the diehards, you know, maybe they were expecting a win over Purdue, and that's fair. But 0-3 is really not a surprise, considering how tough the schedule was. Have expectations, have the fans, as Malcolm Turner, do you believe that anyone sort of looks at this group differently after the start of the year, or do they all sort of feel like, all right, this is the start of the season, this is really when we start to measure Derek Mason and the coaching staff and some of those players?
Yeah, I definitely think it's more of the latter. I think you're right. I mean, going up to Purdue, that was a wonderful football game for Vanderbilt. I don't think Purdue is a program that's light years ahead of where Vanderbilt is right now. And quite frankly, they dropped the ball out there. I mean, you know, they had a chance. They had their opportunities, and they let things get away from them in the second half. And, you know, in year six of a regime, when you go on the road to face a Purdue team that's, you know, not expected to win their conference, you know, that's a game you got to compete in and try to win there in the fourth quarter. So that's certainly disappointing. You know, I think, you know, realistically, sure, you can throw out the LSU and Georgia games. You can throw those out the window because of the level of play that those two teams are at right now. So you go into this next stretch, this Northern Illinois game, and then the month of October is really huge. You know, to me, that's where Vanderbilt has to make their headway. That's where they kind of have to make a run here, put a string of victories together, kind of get themselves in the bowl contention picture. Because, you know, they put themselves in that 0-3 hole, and they clearly have to go 6-3 the rest of the way to get to the postseason. And that's a tough task, you know, for any team. But there's definitely some winnable games on the schedule with what we've seen out of the SEC East, with a lot of the quarterback issues around the league. And Vanderbilt, you know, they've been pretty okay from the injury front, and they've been pretty okay from the offensive front. If they can shore up some things defensively, there's no doubt that they can make a run. But I think now fans are really going to raise their eyebrows and say, all right, time to back up the talk and walk that walk and get some of these victories.
Chad Bishop covers Vanderbilt sports for 24/7 sports. We appreciate the time. Thanks, bud.
All right, guys.
Chad Bishop joining us. I'm looking at the schedule here. So Vandy's got Northern Illinois this week. They go to Ole Miss. You know, winnable game. UNLV at home, and then ETSU at the end of November between the Kentucky-Tennessee game. We might actually go to Saturday, November 30th, Neyland Stadium, Vanderbilt with 3 wins, Tennessee with 2 or 3 wins. I mean, we are trending in that direction.
No question about it. I mean, how many times is Vanderbilt going to be favored? They're favored. They'll be favored against UNLV. They'll be favored against Northern Illinois. They are, right, a 7-point favorite. And then they'll be favored against ETSU. Outside of that, I don't know if they're favored in a game. Tennessee might be favored against South Carolina at home, mm-hmm. might be favored against Vanderbilt at home, would be favored against UAB. So we're talking at most for each team 3 times that they are likely favored.
Derek Mason and Jeremy Pruitt, Thanksgiving weekend competing for win number 4.
Yeah, but I look
throw
at...
Throw out the record.
Yeah.
Literally.
I look at...
That's a game you're going to have to watch intoxicated.
Yeah.
I'm just going to be honest. You can't watch that game sober.
But there's a different case to be made for both teams. One team lost to Georgia State.
Oh, yeah.
And lost to BYU.
True. Mm-hmm.
The other team lost to Georgia, Purdue, and LSU. Now, the last I checked, those are 2 of the top 5 teams in the country, and they lost to them. Now, moving forward, you get NIU, Mississippi, UNLV before you play Missouri. So they can easily put themselves back at 50-50. You look at UT's schedule, no, they're not.
Chance.
No chance whatsoever.
Yeah.
So if,
no, they've gotten to 0-3. Like, they've gotten to 3 losses very differently.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I don't think now if Derek Mason drops the next 3 games or 2 out of the next 3, then yes, they're on the same par with UT.
Yeah.
But if he manages to win the next 3 games, then now we talk about him different and his team different, because that was a tough 3 games for Vandy. And you know,
yeah, that didn't seem like a smart schedule.
Exactly. You have Georgia and LSU at home, but no matter where you play those two teams, who thought you were going to win that game? Now, the Purdue game was that game where it was a swing game. Like, you know, you had your opportunities. You were undisciplined, penalties everywhere, and you just didn't play the type of football that we thought you were going to play.
Well, and Sindelar's a good quarterback, but he looked like Drew Brees on that thing.
Oh, yeah, made him look extremely good.
Yeah, their secondary was atrocious that day. Vanderbilt, just guys were wide open running through the secondary. I do think that there's a lot of different conversations about Derek Mason. One of them is big picture expectations with the current level of financial support that the university is giving him. That's one conversation. And most of us side on, you've got to give Derek Mason more help before you have an accurate representation of what he is. That's one conversation. That's the biggest sort of top-level conversation. The biggest conversation for me after that is, why is it that a master who's coached in the NFL and at a program that was at its peak at Stanford, of the 3-4 defense, cannot coach a defense to stop anybody for years now. If you are the guy that's supposed to be this defensive wizard, and you have been coaching a defense that has got not only, it's not only bad, but it's gotten worse progressively year over year over year, what is wrong with that side of the football that you cannot fix as a guy who was supposed to be, like, have a PhD in the 3-4 blitz scheme that could stop Chip Kelly's spread in the Pac-12? Like, that's what his resume was. I'm the guy who can stop Chip Kelly in the Pac-12. No one else can do it. I can do it. Well, why can't you stop anything now? And so I think that's a totally different discussion, right? There's one about Derek Mason, the head coach, and expectations, and then there's one about the defense, because we know the offensive skill is there. The quarterback's a concern. Also, we could discuss Andy Ludwig moving on after being here for 4 years or 3 years or whatever it was with Kyle Shurmur. That's clearly been a loss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Shurmur and Ludwig together, both moving on the same year, that's cost this team on offense. No question. So there's questions beneath the major question. And the major question, I still think, is in Derek Mason's favor. Mm-hmm. The major question is still, y'all have not given him enough support financially to expect more from him. That's how I would view that part of the conversation.
615-737-1025. We'll open the phones when we come back. Vols calls, Vandy calls, if you want to jump in, 737-1025. And also, we'll get an update to our stupid poll question of the day. It's a runaway landslide. It's like LSU Vandy. Details coming up next. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5. The game, Stick to Sports, coming up in about 30 minutes here on this Tuesday. Also get you an update to our poll question in just a moment. But let's get to Jerry, who's got some thoughts on the Vanderbilt Commodores. 737-1025, always the number. Jerry, you're next on Morning Drive. Jerry, you go ahead.
Hey, guys. Frequent listener, what I'm seeing with the Vols is that they need to do better tackling. Their secondary was playing scared, but I did see improvement because they did basically hit LSU in the mouth, and then lack of tackling let them come back. What are your thoughts?
Thank you, Jerry, for the call. You know, this has been a theme with Vandy this season, whether it's being undisciplined or not getting the ball carrier down when they have him in their grasp. What can you do about that? More tackling, drills, I don't know. But you are right from the standpoint of, you know, they had opportunities to get the guy ball carrier on the ground, and they didn't, which led to yards after the catch. And they need to be better in that area. The secondary, did they play scared? I don't know. I don't think those guys went out there and said, you know what, I'm scared of LSU. LSU was just a much better – LSU offense was better than their defense.
Well, I brought this up during the break. I think Jamar Chase had 10 catches for over 200 yards. I mean, is he an NFL prospect?
I think all of the – I mean, I think Jefferson is the best prospect of the group. Marshall's really good. Chase is kind of like the third option, but he had the huge game against Vandy.
Well, Chase is the third option coming up at 10 o'clock as well. You know what I'm saying?
No, I got it. That's
Darren Donick Chase.
I'm laughing so much.
Sorry about that. Sorry to derail your train of thought.
No, that was so good that it was a wreck. The whole train is off the tracks now, completely destroyed. What's interesting is if you look nationally, all across college football, if you would have told me that LSU would have the number 2, number 8, and the number 8 receivers as far as touchdown receptions, you know, Terrace Marshall has 6 touchdown catches. Mm. Jamar Chase has 5 touchdown catches, and Justin Jefferson has 5 touchdown catches. Jefferson was huge against Texas. So in LSU's biggest moment, Jefferson was the best. They're all really, really good players. I think Jefferson is the biggest pro. He's the junior. The other two are sophomores. So Jefferson's the one that could come out this year and be a first-round draft pick potentially. But again, this isn't any different. I mean, DJ Chark is a guy that mm-hmm. is performing well with Gardner Minshew at quarterback. If LSU just has ever had a quarterback, all of these weapons would be viewed differently in college. We'd look at them like we've looked at the Alabama receiving corps, right? Mm-hmm. Like Amari Cooper and Jerry Jeudy and Calvin Ridley and on down the list. They just have never had a quarterback to sort of get them the ball. And now we're looking at this LSU team going, oh, wait a second, they got a bunch of great receivers. They've always had great athletes at wide receiver. Mm-hmm. They just haven't had good quarterback play or a head coach who is willing to leave the offensive play calling room. And Coach O, what Coach O has done best this year is not walk himself into that room and start pestering with the offense. He has let Joe Brady and Steve Ensminger handle it. And Joe Burrow's flourishing because of it.
It's just baffling how you look at the great head coaches like Nick Saban and, you know, Dabo and Urban, you know, and even Jimbo.
Those are the only ones with rings.
Yeah. And you look at them and they're willing to say, you know what? I will step into the next, you know, to this new type of football, even though I don't want to.
Right. Well, they evolve.
But I will evolve. Well, and then you look at Les Miles and his arrogance. Yeah. Just yeah. His
stubbornness.
And stubborn. And no, it's arrogance too.
Yeah.
It held back a program.
Yeah.
It truly held back a program.
Dude, there was a stretch where they had Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham at receiver.
And Jeremy Hill was the running back on that team.
Like, you held back a program because you didn't want to step into this new way of playing offense. Yep. That it baffles me.
I think what it is, and this is a really interesting sort of psychological conversation about what makes a coach tick, right? Mm-hmm. I think some coaches are incapable of letting things go.
Yeah.
I think, and listen, there's a lot of people like this.
Yeah,
like a lot of managers that can't, like, let the tasks go that are supposed to be accomplished by their employees, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're such a micromanager that you've got to have your hands on everything. And sometimes what makes a great manager is learning when to take your hands off of it, right? Like, that's what makes...
Or trusting that the people you put in that place will do the job.
So when I lived downtown, there was a guy who lived in my apartment building that was a former player for Dabo. He was, just a kind of a middle-of-the-road player. Wasn't a big-time player. Didn't get drafted or anything. But he came to Nashville and started working, and I got to know him a little bit. And, you know, we would talk. I'd say, well, what was Dabo like in the locker room? Like, just give me some, you know, tell me, explain the culture. What is it about him that makes him so... you know, likable, charming, believable, you know, why do you have such buy-in with him? And the thing he always would say, is like, man, dude cannot drop a play to save his life, but I will run through a brick wall for that man because I trust him, because I believe in him, and because he believes in us. And he knows that he can't scheme a defense better than Brent Venables. He knows that, so he doesn't try. He says, Brent, I'm paying you $2 million. Go scheme and stop the spread offense. And Brent Venables goes and does it. And he knows he can't do the offense, so he says, you know what? Chad Morris, at the time, under Taj Boyd and Deshaun Watson, you go do it. And Chad Morris designs an offense. Then he lets Tony Elliott and Jeff Scott do it. And he stays out of the way. But you know what he does great? He does press conferences great. He does recruiting great. He does the whole front CEO thing. That is why I continue to compare Coach O to Dabo Swinney. He is building a buy-in factor at LSU where he just knows his lane. Mm-hmm. And he stays in his lane as the CEO and the face and the figurehead and the recruiter and sort of the leader and the spokesperson of the program, and he's getting out of the way of the offensive coordinator. Jeremy Pruitt last year for Tennessee didn't do that. Jeremy Pruitt got too involved in the offense at the end of the year, and it's why at the end of the year against Vanderbilt, we had no idea who was calling plays in that game. Was it Tyson Helton? Jerick Arantano sitting on the sideline going, who's calling the plays here against Vanderbilt? And so coaches knowing when to step back is it's a really tough thing for coaches to do. And so I give Dabo and Coach O credit for that. Saban has done it to some degree, too.
Well, I was just going to say, he's evolved on both sides because he went from the whole Nussmeier and Jim McElwain offense to what they do now, more RPO, spread stuff. But also defensively, if you remember the first 4 or 5 years of the Saban era, much more bulkier, heavier downhill guys on defense. Johnny Manziel lights you up for 2 years. Now you need athletic linebackers and quicker players.
Yeah, the 100%. The scheme, and Kirby Smart was the defensive coordinator through all of that. So give Smart credit for evolving with Nick Saban on this. Because sometimes you have to go hire a new guy to have that evolution happen. Smart, what was interesting about Kirby Smart is that he just sort of followed in line, lockstep, said, you know what? We need these lankier, slimmer, more athletic linemen who are going to get up the field, be able to play in space. If we need them to drop in coverage, we can do that into the flats. And you know what we're also going to do? We're going to take a page out of hockey's playbook, and we're going to do line changes. We're going to take all four defensive linemen out, or all three linebackers out, or all, you know, five defensive front players out, and put five new dudes in there. And that allowed them to stay fresher for longer against an offense that was running 80 or 90 snaps in a game. So evolution is critical. Gary Patterson evolved at TCU when he went and hired a spread offensive coordinator. That changed the way that TCU performed in the Big 12. I think Michigan and Michigan State are, no, not trying to bring it up because of you, Derek, but I think those are two programs that have failed to figure that out yet on offense. Mm-hmm. They want to do it. They've talked about doing it, but they haven't done it. Jim Harbaugh took a risk on a coordinator. He's failed. Josh Gattis. Mark D'Antonio didn't fire anybody. He just changed all their positions, and that hasn't worked on offense either.
I think what D'Antonio has, he's tried, because if you look at the Spartans offense over the last 5 or 6 years, probably even longer than that, they have went more of a spread offense. They've tried to, with the four or five, they've tried to do something, but yet still run the football. The problem has been the quarterback and the up and down play at quarterback. Now, when they were able to solidify that quarterback position, you saw them scoring a bunch of points.
Well, Kirk Cousins' games were great.
Because they would throw it across the yard. But now with Lewerke, you don't know if he's going to have a good game or a bad game.
Coach D'Antonio, do you want to score more points? Yes. Next question. I'm loving these questions today. They're great questions.
And the reason I bring it up is not to like pick on you, Derek, at all. Mm-hmm. There was a problem on offense last year, and all the fans said, hey, what are you going to do to change the offense? And all he did was change their titles.
Oh, yeah.
He said, hey, all right, you're tight ends coach, now you're running backs coach. You're running backs coach, now you're receivers coach. You're the court. Like, he didn't actually bring in a new mind or a new person to look at things in a new way and try to change that. That may happen this year, of course, in the mm-hmm. offseason, if the offense continues to sort of struggle against good teams. But those are just examples. There's plenty more. Again, Jeremy Pruitt's one. Will Muschamp tried endlessly to bring in a name at Florida and couldn't find the guy to run offense. He's doing the same thing at South Carolina. He keeps bringing in guys to solve the offense, and it's not working. Now, he may have a quarterback now in Helinski, but it's just these guys that refuse. Some guys try so hard to do it. Some guys don't try at all. It's the guy who doesn't try at all that ends up working for it, seems like.
All right, Hollywood, let's get a poll question update for today.
All right, man, it's not looking good for the hummus homies out here.
The hummus homies.
The hummus homies.
Could be a fantasy team name next year.
So I asked, better combo, hummus with the pita bread or chips and queso? And you probably shouldn't have tweeted this out on Taco Tuesday, 89% chips and queso.
I think you're setting yourself up for failure, hummus crowd, with that kind of question. I think if you add...
they don't know.
I'm just saying that they,
what,
our,
they don't know.
Our audience is
don't
gonna,
show or I care what's going on in the hummus.
You know that exactly. Chips and queso is going to win that battle.
Man, people don't understand.
Chips and queso is going to win that battle every day.
As Jim Mora once famously said, you think you know, but you don't, and you never will.
Now,
they just don't understand hummus.
If you tried to go third-party vote and bring some guac into the equation or maybe some salsa, I think you could divide up the vote a little bit, and all of a sudden maybe hummus could get a better chunk of the pie here. But hummus is going to lose to queso.
People don't understand hummus, man. People just don't.
Someone tweeted, hummus plus pita bread with the throw-up emoji.
That person knows.
That's a hater.
Y'all know that chips and queso is more popular than hummus, though. Y'all know that, right?
It's Taco Tuesday.
Yeah, like, I get that.
Reach deep into your souls and acknowledge that.
You got to go to a real good Middle Eastern deli to get quality hummus. Like, these people that are ripping hummus on Twitter, they're probably Sabra shoppers.
Absolutely. they're going to some local... Yeah. Deli or something and grabbing the pre-made hummus and taking it home. No, that's not real authentic hummus, okay? If you get some real hummus with some pita bread, some real freshly made pita bread.
But think about our audience.
I'm not a spaghetti sauce guy because I buy ragu.
Do you think our audience goes to a lot of, like, you think they're going to, like, buy the fancy hummus?
They need to.
Well, most people can't afford fancy hummus. I'm just saying.
Well, no, you go to your local Middle Eastern deli,
exactly.
And you get a good pound for $6.
Yeah, but you go to the Mexican restaurant for $2, you get a giant bowl of queso, man, and it's delicious. So, I guess so.
But you're not getting the real queso either. You're not getting authentic queso. You're not getting that queso that makes you want to say,
I'm not suggesting it's good for you.
Here's what we got to do.
I'm just saying it's popular.
When we get to March Madness, we need to do a field of 64 condiments and dips.
Is there that many?
I think there might be. Okay. If not, we can trim it down to 32.
Yeah,
and queso would be the one seed, obviously.
Yeah, whatever you want.
Yeah.
Hummus. Whatever floats your boat.
Or they could be Kansas and just, you know, get in trouble and not get invited to the party at all.
Lack of control on your program, Kansas.
Try your queso.
We will come back. Delaney Walker with an interesting quote. You're going to hear it, and we'll delve into it next on Morning Drive. It is Morning Drive, 8:33, live here on a Tuesday edition of the show. Little HBO Ballers theme coming back here, right?
Or Spencer Strassmore.
Is that what we're calling it? It's Lil Wayne and Drake.
We need to play it less because it's used too much on that show. It's a good song. All I think about is Ballers when I hear that song.
Totally underrated show. Rob Corddry.
You think so? You think underrated?
I think so.
Have you guys watched the newest season, the one that's ongoing right now?
I have not.
I haven't watched a lick of it.
So it's not a great show. It's not a bad show. It's just there and it's entertaining.
Show.
It's mindless entertainment for football fans, I think, in particular. But this season, they've separated Rob Corddry and The Rock. They've broken up. Spoiler alert. They've broken up and they have different whole storylines now. And here's where I think the show's going. Strassmore is not as good. His angle and his storylines are just kind of the same old stuff. Rob Corddry is absolutely brilliant. He is brilliant in this show. So funny. Bald head, just absolutely hysterical.
Denzel Washington's son is in that show as well.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Ricky Jarrett? Does he play Ricky Jarrett?
I never watched it.
Ricky Jarrett's the receiver, I believe, right? Yeah, that's him.
Who's transitioning from an NFL player's career into a media mogul. Basically, he's Derek Mason.
He's D-Mace.
He's Derek Mason.
So there you go.
You're Denzel's son.
Did you tear up your knee in your last season?
No,
then,
I didn't.
Then I guess you had different careers.
Glad I didn't do that.
All right, stick to sports in about 10 minutes. But one of the things we started off the day with on our show as far as Titans-related stuff was some comments from Delaney Walker, and it's something that we've been talking about on this show. So take a listen. Here's Titans tight end Delaney Walker saying, hey, guys, look, Taylor Lewan's great, but when he comes back, it's not going to just change everything.
I'm going to be real with you. My position says tight end, right? I can't speak about what other position or what they're doing or what they're not doing. This is the NFL, so, I mean, you have to step up. I don't think one guy is going to make a difference. I love Taylor to death, and I think he's one of the best tackles in the game, but is that going to make a difference when he come back? I don't think one person can fix the game. It takes all 11 that's out there. So if all 11 is doing their job, then that's what's going to fix it. I would say, I mean, because if we don't, y'all going to make a big deal out of it. So we better change that real fast.
He knows. He got to change things around. But Taylor Lewan, just because he returns after the Falcons game, don't think all of a sudden this team's got no issues and they're an 11-5 team.
No, not at all. I mean, they're still all the same issues exist. I think he explained it pretty well. Like, Taylor's a really great player. He's going to make everybody better, but he doesn't solve everything. You're going to have to solve a lot of other problems to be a great team. So I don't have a problem at all with Delaney saying what he's saying there. I think it's a good explanation of where this offensive line is right now. They sure as heck could use his help, but he's not a panacea. It's not going to fix everything.
Yeah, I mean, is Taylor, you know, one of the best at his position? Yes, he is. But Delaney hit the nail right on the head. You know, he's not 10 other guys. He can't fix the woes of 10 other guys on offense. He can do his job and maybe make somebody else's job a little bit easier, but he can't fix the third down woes by himself. He can't fix what's happening on the right side of the line of scrimmage. Oh, let's not forget this, you know, this quarterback got hit just as many times last year as he is now this year. And that was with Taylor Lewan last year. Now, Taylor missed some games last year, but still, you know, he's not going to all of a sudden, you know, Taylor comes back after the Atlanta game and then, oh, everything's fixed magically. We become one of the best offenses in the National Football League, and this offensive line goes from dead last to middle of the road or even above that. No. Will they be better? Yes, but they need more than just Taylor Lewan to fix some of what's going on.
But isn't this like one of those weeks where you look at it, and I know we'll get to the game specifically later on, starting tomorrow in the show, but with the Falcons, like, this is a week where I need to, is this a leaders meeting type of week where Delaney Walker and any other, you know, leaders in the clubhouse, captains get together and say, look, guys, you know, I don't know what happened the last 2 weeks, but we need to right the ship immediately. Like, is this one of those moments where closed door meeting? Because if you lose this game, you're 1-3, and I don't know what the odds are of making the playoffs when you're 1-3. I'm just going to guess they're pretty slim.
Well, the Colts were 1-5 last year, made the playoffs, and then the Titans were 1-3 last year and almost made the playoffs. So you can bounce back, but it certainly gets more difficult. The Falcons are kind of asking themselves the same questions right now. Why has their talent not achieved at a higher level? The Falcons are kind of asking themselves the same question. As far as the leadership having those sort of meetings, Derek, I mean, you can speak to that. How much of an impact does that type of stuff actually have?
I mean, I don't think they're at a point where they need this so-called, you know, closed-door team leadership meeting. I don't think they're, you know, in dire need of that. But they do need to, you know, get some things fixed. Maybe the offense just need to talk amongst themselves. Because the defense, you know, and you hate it to be this way, but the defense is holding their own. The defense is holding up their end of the bargain. And with the exception of the early touchdowns against Jacksonville, one which was caused by a fumbled punt return, the defense has been holding their own. So this, you know, let's have a meeting amongst the leaders. Well, some of those leaders are on defense, and the defense is probably looking at it like, man, listen, we're doing our job. I mean, we're not going to make this a us versus you. But we're doing our job. If y'all going to have any meeting, it needs to be amongst yourselves and try to figure some things out. And maybe, just maybe, this is where, you know, Arthur Smith just needs to sit down with his quarterback and, you know, Delaney and maybe some other guys and figure out what they want to do and what they want to be. And if it's a run team, then, okay, let's run the football and everybody's on the same page. If it's a passing type of offense, okay, everybody's on the same page. But we know what we have to do if indeed we're going to make that transition from being a run team to a pass team.
Since 1990, a total of 23 teams have bounced back from a 1-3 start to make the playoffs. So the last 28 seasons, a total of 23 teams.
Yeah, they were 3-1 last year. It was 2 years ago they were 1-3 and almost made the playoffs when they played Houston in the final week of the season. I want to correct that. But again, it's hard to do. There's no question. Every game, every time you go down a game, it's harder and harder to make the playoffs. So Atlanta's also in the same situation. They're also 1-2, I believe, and they're sitting and looking at themselves going like, well, who are we? What are we? Well, if you were on paper going to compare these two teams, you're going to say, who's got the better quarterback? Falcons. Who's got the better receiving core? Falcons. Who's got the better offensive line? Probably the Falcons. Who's got the better defensive units?
Titans.
Probably the Titans at all three positions. So, okay. All right. On paper, it's sort of 50-50. Who's got the better coach? I don't think we know. Frankly, I don't think we have an idea. If Dan Quinn's been to a Super Bowl, but right now people are questioning whether or not his message is getting through to that team. They were 7-9 last year.
No, you're right. Here's the difference between, you know, starting 1-3 and making the playoffs and starting 1-3 and not making the playoffs. And the Titans are in a 1-3 and maybe not making the playoffs. I'm not saying they won't, but here's the difference. If you're 1-3 and in those three losses, none of them are divisional games, or one is divisional game, then that's different. But if you're 1-3 and two of those losses are within your division, it's very difficult.
Yeah, no question about that. They were also 2-3 when they started 2 years ago and made the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So they started the season 2-3 and then made the playoffs. So you can kind of toy with a bad record early. The Colts are the anomaly last year, right? At what, 1-5? And then they rattle off 10 out of 11 or whatever. Like, that's the anomaly. Generally, you can't operate that way.
Right now, your chance to win a 4-pack of tickets to see the MTSU Blue Raiders take on Marshall at Floyd Stadium on Saturday, October the 5th. Just be caller number 5. Right now, it's 615-737-1025. Caller 5, 615-737-1025. A pair of tickets for MTSU and Marshall on Saturday, October the 5th. We'll come back next with Stick to Sports on Morning Drive.
Ain't no river wide enough to keep me from getting to you, baby.
Ah, yes. Mm. Remember the Titans 19 years ago today, it came out.
Is it bizarre, Derek, that the first thing his brain goes to is a movie that this was in?
That's the reason why I played it.
It's just on brand, baby.
Yeah, Snick, man. Snick.
No, I agree. It's not a surprise. It was a rhetorical question.
Remember when Louis Lastic is walking in the locker room and he's kind of holding his back?
Oh, yes.
And they're like, what's wrong, man? Oh, I just got done giving your mommy a piggyback ride. She weighs twice as much as me.
Oh, my God. That is tremendous.
It was your mama jokes. They ain't great. Understand
that's
it at
like,
first.
It's kind of like Nick Saban's D's Stones yeah. jokes.
Yes.
How he loves D's Stones jokes, and nobody yes. knew about that until about last week when Josh Jacobs told everybody.
Might yeah. go home today, watch a little Remember the Titans.
Is that song on the Big Chill soundtrack, by the way, too? Best soundtrack ever on the planet, Earth. Mm-hmm. Big Chill. Yeah, it's before your time, Marquise.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, because I was like, Wait. Hey, don't look for me for an
oh,
answer.
Oh, you
that.
Don't know the Big Chill, huh?
Do you?
No.
Okay. No. It is. Oh, it's an amazing movie. You got to watch it. Big Chill. Great movie.
Stick to sports. Let's go.
The world is a crazy place.
Crazy sounding pretty good right now.
Let's lighten the mood.
After all that seriousness, you're just going to crumple it up and throw it in the trash.
Basically.
And stick to sports. Now, on Morning Drive.
All right, D-May, stick to sports. BTYB.
Hey, it's brought to you by Decorated Den Interior. Stick with the pros at Decorated Den. When you're ready to decorate your home, office, or outdoor spaces, request a complimentary appointment, which is free. On this planet, okay? Check them out. Cool Spring. DecoratedDen.com. Yes! Yes, I messed it up again. DecoratedDen.com. Sorry, Bonnie. I'm so sorry. DecoratedDen.com.
We're not using
number
the other guys
one.
Oh, man, we're just combining sponsors over here. Okay, so I played that song for a reason, 19th anniversary of Remember the Titans, but I'm not going to ask you guys what's your favorite sports movie because that's pretty obvious. I mean, but sports, I'm going to ask you guys this. What is the best sports movie that wasn't meant to be a good sports movie? You know what I mean? Like, Remember the Titans and Rudy and Hoosiers, all these movies, these heartfelt sports movies are meant to be good sports movies. Mm-hmm. But there's sports movies that are just sports movies that are supposed to be just bad goofing off of sports, but they actually are, you know, you put them in a top 10 list like as far as best sports movies.
Are you saying movies that are like really well done, but they're not really about sports? Like, so I always ask this question, is Caddyshack and Big Lebowski, do they count as sports movies? It's about one surrounding bowling and one surrounding golf. They're not really sports movies, but they are about a sport.
But yeah, but see, that's what I mean.
They are incredibly well made. Those are my two favorite sports movies.
So like Waterboy would be one. Happy Gilmore, I think it's overexceeded that it is kind of now everybody like, considers it a
like
sports movie.
Bad movies that were actually, I think, somewhat good. Like I would go with The Replacements.
Yeah.
With Keanu Reeves and Gene Hackman. It's kind of cheesy. It's kind of hokey. But I still think it's pretty good.
Like
I'll watch it if it's on. It's not an all-timer, though.
Yeah, like Rudy and Bull Durham and Field of Dreams and, you know, Remember the Titans all sort of fit into that mold that you're talking about, right? Like just traditional great
Yeah, traditional,
sports
heartfelt sports movies. But then you have these goofy, it's a comedy.
Like Rookie
sports,
of the Year?
Yeah, like Rookie of the Year. One of my favorites
Angels
is,
in the Outfield.
One of my favorites is Semi-Pro.
With
Will Ferrell and Andre 3000.
Oh,
and also,
man, really
and
really
also Blades of Glory with
underrated.
Him and Joe Hader.
Underrated.
Underrated sports movie.
What's the one that just... Mighty Ducks. Wouldn't Mighty Ducks qualify?
Yeah, yeah. Mighty Ducks.
Like, not a particularly well-crafted
Giants,
cinematic.
I thought.
Little Giants. Starring Al Bundy.
That's a good one.
Do you know it's a movie that I thought about yesterday when I was thinking, like, man, what are my top five sports movies? And I thought about this movie, Hardball, with Keanu Reeves.
No.
You never see that movie?
Never occurred.
Top five sports movie with Keanu Reeves?
No, I'm not going to put it in top five, but it was a very heartfelt movie, though.
So, like, Blue Chips would fall into this category.
Yeah, Blue Chips, yeah.
Like, not a great cinematic accomplishment, but a really entertaining sports movie,
yeah.
Right? Like,
can a Disney movie make the all-time list?
But it was fun.
can Disney make it? Because I believe Remember the Titans is a Disney movie.
Yeah, technically it is.
Yeah.
So, and then Mighty Ducks was, I mean, I would put Mighty Ducks in
not
a conversation.
Not a cinematic accomplishment. A really fun movie, though.
Yeah, same thing for White Man Can't Jump. I don't think it was initially.
I think that's a phenomenal movie, though. Like, great writing, great acting, great direction. Like, I would not say Mighty Ducks has all of those great things.
Kingpin
is phenomenal. So good.
Don't get me started on White Man Can't Jump. I've got quotes.
When he looks in the rear view mirror. when he's looking in the rear view mirror in Kingpin, oh my God. If you know what I'm
Number
talking about,
two.
You're laughing.
All right, guys. So where are we at in journalism?
It's dead. It's now slideshow.
Is journalism dead?
It's not dead.
You got to pay for it now. It's on The Athletic.
Don't let the power brokers running this country tell you that journalism's dead.
Well, I'm going to let somebody tell you it's dead because Mike Gundy, in a teleconference, talks about journalism because a question was asked about his hair and cutting it, and here is Mike Gundy.
Coach, I know you were joking around Saturday night. I was there about what you think of social media, but was there any truth to those reports that Boone Pickens kind of was joking around and left you a gift card for a haircut? Joking with you, that's all.
Don't hurt the real journalism world. It's jackasses like you that cause problems, okay? They shouldn't even let you call in. Do you want to talk football? We'll talk football. If you want to be out there and talk idiotic social media, then you need to go do something with a college kid.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
I love the writer. He's like, okay, thank you. So for those who don't know, T. Boone Pickens is the largest booster in Oklahoma State, gave like $300 million, and then he passed away a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And if that question was a joke, like, hey, did he leave you a gift card for a haircut, then that person has no business being on the conference call. That's not mm-hmm. journalism. That's you trying to get yourself famous by asking a stupid question. If there's an actual story that T. Boone Pickens actually in his will left haircut money to Mike Gundy, because there's been some – to know the backstory of Mike Gundy, the reason he manipulated Tennessee twice to get raises from Oklahoma State is he was trying to make more money from the administration and get more power. If there's actually a story where T. Boone Pickens actually left that thing to Mike Gundy, then it's a real question he has to ask, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what's funny is – because in sports radio, like, I don't view us to be journalists. We're like quasi-media. We give opinions. We entertain.
Lowercase j.
We try to have fun. But, like, there are journalists that do a really good job. But mm-hmm. to this guy's point, even at media days when we went to Hoover, mm-hmm. there are some people that get a media credential that ask some of these questions, and you look at them like, where are these guys coming from?
I think it all depends on how you or when you ask that question. If you ask a serious question and get an answer, then you could probably follow up with sort of like this lighthearted, funny question to kind of get the coach to see, you know, kind of get the coach to open up a little bit. But I don't think you can start, you know, a interview off with something like that.
Well, and a teleconference is also very different than a press conference. The teleconference is done every week so that people around the league – so, like, if you're covering – the Vandy NIU game, for example, and you cover Northern Illinois, you're mm-hmm. going to jump on Derek Mason's teleconference because you can't be here
exactly.
for that. So you're trying to get as much information about Vanderbilt so you can write about it for your fans. When you're at Derek Mason's press conference, because you work here locally and you have a relationship with them, you can ask sillier questions, right? Like, you can be a little bit more laid back. There's a really deeper conversation that we could have about this, and we could probably ask Trey Crowder about this. If the media represents the fans. Nick, you're big on this. We represent the fans. And we ask questions that fans want to know about in a perfect world. We represent the fans. The fans want to know about the mullet, so we ask about the mullet. We always don't like the questions we have to ask. But we have to ask questions that the fans care about. And some of this that's happening to journalism is about the fans wanting garbage. The fans no longer want the X's and O's. They get bored with that. They want the stupid and the silly because mm-hmm. that's what they can scroll through Instagram and read real fast.
Yeah, but also, if you criticize Pat Fitzgerald's lackluster offense from Northwestern, here's the answer that he's going to give to you.
Well, we just take 90 hours and play Wii and golf all week. I mean, yeah, I mean, what do you think? Yeah, I go into every game plan expecting it to work, to be quite honest with you. I understand there's 40,000 experts on Twitter that can call plays for me, so my email address is hashtag I don't care, okay? So shoot that out. We got to be better, and we're going to work to be better. So anybody that's negative, I respect it, and I don't care.
I like the last part. I respect it, but I don't care.
We got Pat, we've got Gundy, we've got D'Antonio yesterday. Yeah, yeah. Boy, there's a lot of salt in the air these days.
Yeah, I guess what they all have in common, a couple bad losses. What's funny is the line that kind of goes unnoticed there is he's like, actually, we spend 90 hours a week to go play golf. Like, no, we don't spend 90 hours a week game planning. Of course they do. They spend a ton of hours game planning. I think the delivery is funny there. I don't know if you guys caught that. My email address is hashtag I don't care. That doesn't make any sense.
No.
Sound a little old there, Fitz.
Yeah, he does.
But I like it.
But the sentiment is great.
I like the hashtag I don't care.
I'd have been like, no, my email's gopoundsand@gmail.com. Drop me a note.
Go pound sand.
All right. When we come back, that's it for Stick to Sports. Trey Crowder, Braden Gall, I'll let you introduce and tease this. This is your guy.
He's from a very small town in Salina, Tennessee. He's a Preds fan. He's a Vols fan. He is a comedian. He also has unique perspective and opinions on things, and we're not going to talk about that with him. We're going to talk about the Vols and the Preds and sort of just being a comedian. We're going to, you know, go at this a different direction because we've covered Tennessee sucking in every other possible way. So let's try to do it with a little humor.
No relation to Jamison Crowder, Channing Crowder, or Jay Crowder, but it's Trey Crowder.
Yeah, and I want to say there was a former...
I'm going to do my Crowder power rankings here.
Oh, God.
Just saying.
Jeez. Crowder?
Yeah.
When you said Crowder, I thought we were going to talk Memphis Grizzlies with Jay Crowder. But
sure, oh, yeah. Sure to entertain. There's no question.
We're back after this on Morning Drive.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohiostime.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.